Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages.
Children should not be listening
actually,
to this.
Actually, I guess not. I have to hit an explicit tag when I upload this because I think we say fuck every once in a while. We don't try to.
Wait, really? It says explicit?
I have to pick clean or explicit on Anchor when I upload this. Gotcha. And there's a tag on there on iTunes, and I think it means we don't try to force dirty words.
Yeah, I think even if we didn't use cussing, that you should still mark it as explicit, I feel like.
Figure why not.
It gives it a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, and you know what? Kids aren't our demographic. I think we're just looking for adults, right? We're a couple adults.
Yeah, we're trying to make some highbrow, deep, really hard, complicated to understand, like NPR kind of stuff here.
That is all I have ever tried to do in my career. I do that in my day job, in my analysis of video games. I do it with panning the screen.
This conversation kind of reminds me of that French theorist. Did you ever hear about him?
It's impossible to not think about that, really. My name is Dan Reichert. Sitting across from me is Bianca Reichert.
Yes,
she's my wife.
I am.
She's great.
I'm also a human in my own right, Daniel.
You are also a human. We are both humans that watch streaming shows
and
talk about them.
We watch them. We talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
We podcast about them. We live together. We work together. We play hard.
We have a dog.
We got a dog. We know when to pat each other in the back. We know when to sit down with each other and have a stern talk.
We miss all the shots we don't take. We hang in there, baby.
We like laughs. We like to travel.
We dance like no one's watching.
We dance like no one's watching.
Yes, that's us. That's Dan and Bianca. We are your hosts for Panning the Stream. And welcome to part three of our deep dive, our first deep dive into Terrace House.
The penultimate episode for us.
That's a good word.
Yeah.
And for the longest time, it sounded like an important word. And I wanted to be able to use it, but I also did not care enough to look it up. And then once I actually just kind of found out what it meant, it's like, oh, it's a second to last. That's just a cooler way to say second to last. I can do that.
Yeah, I never knew about, I guess, the prefix pen. I never thought of it meaning like second to last or something. But I know ultimate has to be the
final.
But no one really refers to the last episode as the ultimate episode, right?
No, I think you hear ultimate more as like, hey, we got all the Smash Brothers characters in this game. This is Smash Brothers Ultimate.
It
means like the biggest, the I guess final in a way.
You know, come to think of it, Dan, I think I never use the word ultimate. It's like a word that I see, but I don't think I ever use it.
I say the ultimate warrior at times, but he was not the last warrior.
And that's also a title. Like, using the word.
It is a title.
You know what I mean? It's his name.
Warrior was his name.
Okay.
Ultimate was not on his birth certificate or his legal name change.
It was his wrestling moniker, the Ultimate
It
warrior.
Is true. That's true.
So it's like the proper version. I'm talking the common, unproper version of the word.
Yes.
Ultimate. Isn't that something we use? All right, sorry. Let's just get back on track here.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Terrace House. So Terrace House is a TV show.
That's Terrace House.
Terrace House.
Not Terrorist
No, you're
house.
Confused. Every time we start the show, and it's very nice people and not a bunch of terrorists in a house.
No.
I try to tell you every
Definitely
time.
Not. The opposite of that, actually.
I think
we could say it's the opposite.
It is
that.
Not at all a terrorist house. No, these are six very nice folks. We've had our issues before with Makoto.
But I wouldn't compare him to a terrorist.
No, I would not. No, for the record, Makoto of Terrace House fame is not a terrorist.
Quote you and just say, Makoto of Terrace House, .. is a terrorist.
No, I don't know what he's done since Terrace House, but I doubt I doubt he is a terrorist. Anyway, we're going to talk about Terrace House here for the third
That's
time.
The idea, at least.
The penultimate time. This is going to cover episodes 10 through 14 of Terrace House Boys and Girls in the City, Part 1 on Netflix.
Mm.
So this is kind of a rebuilding, a reestablishing set of episodes, I think, because I think with the last episode that we did,
right,
the last Painting the Stream, we covered a lot of very dramatic, I think the first episode we did is like, hey, let's meet the folks.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second episode we did is like, maybe some of these folks aren't quite what we thought.
Right.
And then this one is more like, hey, maybe some folks are leaving.
Well, we're hitting the reset button, and also we get closure in some ways, and clearer idea of what's going on with certain storylines.
Yes.
In other ways.
Yes.
So I think the way we should do this is just talk about the individual plots.
Yeah, and you know what? I think there is one kind of main story that goes through these episodes, and that is the story of Uchi and Minori.
Yeah.
And I'd say let's save that for last, and let's touch on some of the other stuff that
you
happens
here.
Why
don't you just talk about Yuriko? Because I feel like her whole arc kind of wraps up pretty nicely here.
It's got a tidy end here in this set of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think where she was at the end of the last
set.
So
the last set, we remember she was on that date with Uchi.
Yes.
And she said, I decided to get back or reach out to my ex-boyfriend to see if he wants to restart things because I still have feelings for him.
Right, the infamous Blue Note date where she crushed Yuki. Yeah.
And then I don't remember if it was this set of the episode or the previous episode where she first sees her ex-boyfriend again. Was it this set?
I think we met him in this set of episodes.
Okay, so she sees him. They have dinner or something, and she proposes to him, like, do you want to get back together? And he says, well, ask me again when you're done with your exams, because he is also a med student. He seems to be a little further along the process, and he seems to, you know, have a pretty good head on his shoulders, and definitely knows how difficult the curriculum is, and doesn't want Yuriko to get distracted by anything like relationship or whatever. And that's clearly where he's at. He doesn't want to get distracted either.
Yeah, the panelists almost seem kind of disappointed that he's not this, like, asshole. Because it's just like, you know, you want to root for Yuki so much, and you're so crushed by what she said to him.
Right.
And it's like part of you kind of expects, like, oh, man, she's going back to this asshole. Mm-hmm. But then you meet the guy, and it's like, well, okay, there's no real red flags here. He just seems like a nice guy.
Exactly.
And, like, it's reasonable what he's saying.
Totally. So she takes her exams. She's pretty confident in how she does.
Mm-hmm.
And then they meet again to have some kind of coffee, lunch, I don't know, at Cafe Chillax.
Right. And I think before they even meet, she basically tells everyone at the house, like, hey, we're going to have this meetup where I'm just going to let them know how I feel about this stuff, and then I'm leaving. So, mm-hmm. like, regardless of how the Cafe Chillax mm-hmm. meetup goes, she is leaving TerraSense.
Right. And I think that move was done almost in consideration to the viewers. Like, she probably knows that everyone watching at home wants closure on this plot line, so
right.
she didn't want to leave us hanging.
Right, right.
So she meets her boyfriend again, or her ex-boyfriend, rather. And, you know, it's a little awkward. Essentially, she asks him again how he feels and whether he wants to move forward with her. And he says pretty much, like, the reasons they initially broke up are the same. I mean, they haven't gone away. They still have this enormously difficult school to get through. So he pretty much says no, and it's not an option. I think he unequivocally says it. Like, he says it's not an option.
He says, like, it's not an option. I don't see a future with us. I'm probably moving back to my hometown anyway. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't really leave any opening for this. And it's just, I know we had our issues with things that Yuriko did in the last set of episodes, but, like, you can't help but feel for her when you're
her
kind of keep this, like, straight face while, you know, her heart's being slowly
crushed. Yeah, and I couldn't ignore the fact that, like, we were watching this happen to her, and in her life, that's probably a very, really significant thing for her. Like, she's probably always going to remember that day when she was sitting in the cafe and watched her ex-boyfriend walk away in the rain. You know, it was very traumatic.
Oh, yeah, the rainy, when they're in the, like, open air thing. Yeah.
But I will say, I forgot his name, but props to him for being so decisive. I feel like a lot of the issues in Terrace House, or a lot of the drama, comes from people being kind of indecisive, being kind of vague in their feelings, not really expressing themselves. But he, like, pretty definitively said, like, it's not going to happen.
Yep, and says it nicely. By the way, Tadamichi is his name.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he says nicely. So, you know, I respect the guy. I don't feel for him. In a way, too, Dan, I was right with you where you said, you know, you kind of wanted him to be an asshole and stuff. And because I was rooting so hard for Yuki, I almost wanted Yuriko to get hers.
Yeah.
But then I obviously felt really, really bad for her when I saw her crying. So, okay. So, I mean, that pretty much wraps up Yuriko. She's leaving the house.
Yes. So she's leaving. Obviously, that means we will get someone else coming in. But before we get into the new person,
mm-hmm.
let's go into the other person who's leaving, which we've got Makoto. And so, I mean, this whole last set of episodes that we watched was very... Makoto was fucking up.
The downfall of Makoto.
Yes. And I think this ends his arc in a little more of a positive way. It doesn't forgive, you know, the way he acted or the weirdness in which he acted in the last set. But he talks to Minori about things. And she, you know, she says straight up, like, I'm not interested in you anymore. If we hang out again, it's not because I have feelings for you. And then after this, Makoto goes to the guy's room and talks to him and says, like, I was wrong. So, like, this is the first time I think we get Makoto straight up saying, like, hey, I fucked up. I handled that poorly. And I thought that was a good step for him because up to this point.
Really? I didn't really perceive it as him apologizing.
There was that point where he, I think, just straight up said, like, I was wrong.
I thought he was saying he was wrong in his pursuing of Minori.
Oh.
And then, you know, subsequent rejection. I don't think he admitted to being wrong about any of the Uchi stuff.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if it was as specific as saying, like, Uchi, I'm sorry, I was fucked up towards you.
I don't remember feeling that he really redeemed himself at all. I'm happy to see him go. I feel like he was kind of not, he was just very passive and also just causing shit, like, by and not taking care of himself. And he just, I feel like all of these characters in the show, there's something about them that we could all aspire to be like in one way or another, and I couldn't really get that with Makoto.
Yeah, like, and I don't want to act like I have, you know, fond feelings about the way Makoto was during this show.
That's not what you were telling me last night. You couldn't stop talking about your fond feelings for Makoto.
Look, I know I got that picture framed. I know it's hanging here in our apartment, but, like, that doesn't mean I just have, like, 100% fond feelings.
Well, it doesn't have to be next to the bed.
I know. Look, we'll talk about that after the podcast. But, yes, I think it was good for him to at least, like, just seeing him say the words, I was wrong, or some permutation of that, was more than I think he gave us in the last set. I don't think it forgives the way he acted, but, hey, at least he knew he kind of fucked up. And he basically just tells people, like, hey, once baseball ends, I'm out of here. He tells the guys first in the guys' room, and then he has, like, a dinner where he announces it. And then he writes individual letters for everyone. You know, we don't really see the contents of it, but he says, hey, read this after I leave. And it seems like he leaves in, like, everyone else is kind of like, I don't know how we act towards him, because we were all kind of not liking him at the end.
Right.
But it is, it's civil. I'd say it's more than civil. There was even, like, a little bit of friendliness. Like, oh, hey.
Well, I mean, they're Japanese young people. They're extraordinarily polite.
They were very polite.
So I can't see a circumstance in which they wouldn't see him off in a very nice way.
Yeah, so he leaves with the letters and everything. Definitely was a reason he was at both the bottom of both of our lists last episode. He will not be eligible for the Terrace House Power Rankings.
Terrace House Power Rankings!
This week. We will have new folks on this time. So that's it for Makoto, and that's it for Yuriko. So let's talk about the new folks we got here.
Yeah, first let's do Armand.
Yes, Armand is a 24-year-old who replaces Makoto. He is half Iranian, half Japanese.
Right. He lives in Hawaii. I think he grew up in Japan for 10 years before moving to Hawaii or something.
Yes, obviously, like, very fluent in English. We see him, like, kind of chatting with some friends on the beach in Hawaii, and very fluent in Japanese and English. He he knows some Farsi. He seems very smart.
Yeah, he seems like a nice guy, and he tries to get employed as a English teacher in Japan. And he even offers his teaching services to the people in the house.
Yeah, we hear a lot about, you know, he's into boogie boarding. There were, like, three things that kept repeating, three things that I didn't know anything about. It was, like, boogie boarding, surfing, and
kickboxing.
That's right, which we see him, like, finding a kickboxing gym and everything.
My overall impression of him is very positive. I think he seems really chill. He, like, right off the bat, he's giving Uchi some really good advice. He seems calm and level-headed and considerate. And, like, you know, I thought he was really sweet to Mizuki in that morning scene when she's about to go to the office and she's wearing the turtleneck.
Oh, right. Yeah, she's, like, blushing and everything.
I thought that was really sweet. And, you know, I'm always rooting for Mizuki because she hasn't been getting much attention from any guys this season. So
yeah, I think I was primed and ready to dislike him at the beginning.
Really?
Like, oh, this is going to be some hot shit surfer dude, you know, thinks he's a super cool guy. Like,
I thought you'd be rooting for him just by virtue of the fact that, you know, he's lived in America for so long.
No, I mean, there are plenty of people that live in America that I don't like at all.
Well, I mean, he's probably more relatable. I mean, I'm not saying obviously you like everyone that's an American, but, like, you know, he comes with some different sensibilities, you know, probably easier to relate to him than, you know, a lot of the other people in the house.
I don't know. My first thought was that I wasn't going to like him at all. I thought he was going to be hot shit surfer guy, going to go, you know, meet all the chicks and stuff.
What made you think that? Because if you see him, maybe, but he starts talking immediately. He immediately comes across as a nice guy that isn't like that at all. So.
That's the thing. It's like when they first start showing him and, like, you know, they show the thing where they're not showing his face and like he's on the beach. And I was just like, oh, God, is this going to be some hot shit, you know, surfer dude? Asshole or something. And then
so surfer dude asshole.
Look, if you try to dig deeper and pick this apart, I don't think you're gonna get much. I think I was just having some sort of knee-jerk first impression.
It's interesting that if he's a surfer dude, he's an asshole, but if he's, you know, I suggested that you might be able to relate to him more as an American, but no, absolutely not. That's a crazy thing for me to say.
What,
like you said, you know, when I said you could probably relate to him more because he's an American, you said that's not the case, but then every surfer guy is an asshole? I feel like my generalization was a lot more.
I don't think all surfer guys. No, I was just operating off of not any real information or whatever. I just thought that for some reason I thought this guy was going to think he was hot shit.
Okay, basically. Well, just, you know, there might be a surfer listening and it's not nice to say stuff like that.
No, I never said that all surfer guys are assholes. I don't think that at all. I just wondered if this... I don't know. I was just prepared for, like, somebody to come in and basically be, like, this heel hot shit guy who's going to try to take all the girls from the guys or whatever. And, like, I was wrong. I was completely wrong because he comes in and we meet him and he's just completely nice. He's very humble. He's very intelligent. He seems great.
Mm-hmm.
And doesn't ever seem pushy, doesn't seem arrogant at all. So, yeah, like, I mean, all the people on the panel and everything are talking about, like, man, there's just really no downside here. Like, he just seems like a really genuinely good dude.
Yeah, and almost like out of a movie when he goes to that kickboxing gym for the first time and that, like, former national champion trains him and he's like, oh, I haven't done it for, like, 2 years. And then the guy's, you know, training with him a little bit and he's like... oh, well, for a 2-year gap, you know, you do really well. I feel like it's the beginning of a movie where this guy takes the kickboxing world by storm, starts in Japan, and then conquers, you know, internationally.
Yeah, and they tell him right away that, like, hey, you could probably compete if you want to have this mm-hmm. match. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he said he had, like, a 5-1 record or something doing, like, MMA or kickboxing or something before. So, yeah, it sounds like I'm sure we're going to see more of that in this next set of episodes.
I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, no, he seems like a really good guy.
Oh, and he goes on a very nice date with Mizuki.
Yes, he has like a day-long date with her where I think they get food and they go shopping and
they walk all around. She tells him about like all these traditional Japanese things, like there's that, you know, scrubbing the money thing, like the wish stuff. And, you know, it seems like they have a really great day and they ended on the beach taking pictures and stuff. It was a really sweet date.
Yeah, it seemed great and you could tell that Mizuki was very much into this whole thing. She was into him right away and then I think after the date, I think she was even more into him because it just seemed like they had a great time and they seem to get along very well. So that is the new fella. We got a new lady as well. We got Arissa and she works in like a hat store or she's trying to create her own hat brand. She does a bunch of stuff with hats.
Okay. She has her own hat brand. She doesn't work at a hat store.
Oh, I just saw a store with a bunch of hats in it.
Yeah. She's a hat designer and she has her own brand. That's okay. Why she was choosing labels for the hats in the very first scene before you even see her face.
Right. There were like notebooks with like drawings of hats in them with like numbers and stuff. And I just remember looking at that and being like, man, people, there's probably a whole notebooks filled with hat drawings and hat information. It's just a whole hat world I don't know anything about.
Well, how do you think these hats happen?
I never think about hats. I never, unless it's a exceptionally funny hat or a larger than normal hat or something, I don't think about hats ever. I don't wear hats. Yeah. Unless it's just like something crazy, like if I see somebody wearing like a beanie with a propeller in public, mm-hmm. the amount of time I spend in an average day thinking about hats is zero.
Yeah. When you start thinking about how everything we see came from somewhere, it can be pretty overwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, we're sitting here in a bedroom right now. I'm looking at a blanket and there's probably a bunch of people that think about blankets all day because they work on blankets. Somebody's got to make that blanket. Someone's there's probably a whole factory that makes blankets.
Yep.
Man, world's crazy, isn't it?
It sure is, Daniel.
Yep. So Arissa knows all about hats. She wears hats.
She seems very fashionable, and I really like her. She seems really quick. She doesn't hesitate to answer any of the questions that are being asked her when she first arrives. She seems sweet and down to earth. You know, she just goes out of her way to drink with the guys and stuff like that.
Yeah, she kind of asks about that. Like, oh, wait, they're drinking? And then kind of like shows up mm-hmm. and it's Yuki and Arman that are down there drinking. And I think they actually do another run to get more liquor and stuff because they were running out. Mm-hmm. So, Yeah, I think everyone kind of likes her at the beginning. I think maybe the only question might be Mizuki. I think there might be a little bit of jealousy there because all the guys seem to like her, it seems.
Arisa,
when
yeah.
she comes in, like Arisa. So we're coming hot off the trails of Mizuki and Armand's really good date.
Right.
And all of a sudden this new girl comes in and all the guys seem to like her.
Mm-hmm.
And she's kind of hitting it off with Armand. And so there's definitely plenty of shots of Mizuki just being like, hmm. Okay, yeah. What's going on here?
And you could tell, though, that Mizuki is too big of a person to, like, act like a bitch toward Arisa, but, you know, she's probably feeling a little hurt. And I don't blame her. You know, she's been, you know, an audience to everyone else's romances throughout this whole thing, and she's never, you know, had her thing, so.
Yeah, and finally there's something going on in that regard with her, and then all of a sudden it's like, whoop, new girl comes in. Like, I almost felt like watching this set of episodes, it reminded me a bit of like SNL, where it's like these new people come in, and like even watching the opening thing where it's like, oh, you know, here's all the characters, here's all the people on this show. It's like, oh, we've cycled out a couple and a couple new ones come in. It's like when a new season of SNL starts and it's like, oh, Jenny Slate's gone and they brought in, you know, this new person or whatever. Here's Beck Bennett. Oh, we get to meet these new people or whatever. You know, it's this like rotating thing of like, oh, here's the old veterans or whatever. Does that make sense? Like, oh, Mizuki.
What does this have to do with Mizuki?
Like, Mizuki's like, oh, the Daryl Hammond. Oh, she's been there forever. You know? You're just staring at me. You know what I mean?
What does this have to do with Mizuki being jealous of Arisa?
Because I'm talking about new people coming in, like Arisa coming in. Like, I felt like this set of episodes where we meet these two new people, I feel like we're watching a new season of SNL.
Very loosely, I understand the metaphor, but I feel like there's so many more obvious things you could have gone with.
I think as far as a show with a rotating cast, I think SNL...
This isn't necessarily a rotating cast.
I think in this set of episodes, we saw two rotate out, we saw two rotate in. I think a clear analogy is the new season, a new season of SNL.
I don't think so. I mean, it's apples and oranges. Like, you have to wait a whole season for people. And it's not necessarily the case that new people come to SNL. And also, it seems at will that people leave the Terrace House.
People
and I just
SNL.
Don't understand the connection between Mizuki being jealous of Arisa.
I wouldn't focus on that. I would just.
But that's exactly what we were talking about, and then you brought up this SNL thing. I'm just trying to understand how your mind works, Dan.
Because I saw the intro, and I saw new people in the intro, and it reminded me of when I see new people in the intro of SNL.
Oh, you should
and
have
old
said
people
that.
Leaving.
You should have said that.
Oh, okay.
We weren't talking about the intro to Terrace House at all.
I just took the new person coming in as a bridge to this other thing, I thought.
Okay, well, if we were talking about the intros, then yeah, I'm with you. But this came out of nowhere. That's why I was so confused.
So we agree that Mizuki is Daryl Hammond.
Yeah.
Or is she Tim Meadows? Or Keenan?
Wait,
I guess
it
hasn't been going long enough.
Is Daryl Hammond the woman from Kill Bill? She was on SNL?
That's Daryl Hannah.
Oh.
Daryl Hammond is the guy who played Bill Clinton on SNL and is now the announcer after Don Pardo passed.
Oh.
He played Sean Connery on Celebrity Jeopardy. He played Clinton.
Right. Yes.
Very different than Daryl Hannah.
I was like, I don't remember her being on SNL.
No, she probably hosted at some point in like 1992. Yes. Anyway, so we all agree it's exactly the same as SNL. So that brings us to the main thing going on in these episodes, and that is the ongoing saga of Minori and Uchi.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we left things off where, you know, Uchi had stated that during Uchi Week, when he met the three girls, the one he wanted to pursue the most was Minori. And so we see that keep going, and they still like each other, but, like, things never kind of ramp up and get to that next thing. There's no kiss for most of these episodes.
Well, wait a minute. Let's slow down a little bit, Dan.
Okay.
Now, something that really stuck with me, and I even turned to you and said, man, this is hot, was when he was giving – so he offers her a hair and head massage treatment because she has this – fashion show coming up.
Girls Walk or Girls
she has a
Show.
She has a fashion show.
Yeah.
And so, you know, he gives her this head massage. Now, I don't know if anyone out there can relate to me on this, but I feel like when I go to get my hair done and they shampoo my head, it feels so good. And it's a feeling that I can't replicate with my own hands. It's only when someone else massages my head for me that it feels so good. And so the prospect of a potential love interest not just shampooing, but sensually rubbing one's head is extremely exciting for me. So I was very happy for Minori in this instance. I was really hoping that Uchi would just have the balls to lean over and give her a big old smooch in the kiss.
She had a face mask.
No, it was just a little piece of paper draped over her nose because I guess there was a lot of steam or something.
Oh, okay.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
I don't know. I thought that was great. And anyway, it turns out that his hair salon is actually working the show that she's modeling for.
Yes.
So it leads to this funny moment where I guess the show kind of airs not so long before the events that we see. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
the people are aware of what's going on and kind of as it happens. So you have these models talking to Uchi about where he is with Minori, and asking Minori where she is with Uchi, because that's like the big thing that's on everyone's minds.
Mm-hmm.
But they're in the same room together, so it's really awkward.
Yeah, they're like 7 feet away.
Right, yeah. So it's pretty awkward. But yeah, I thought that was a cute moment. And then they kind of hang out after the show. And Minori does a great job at her fashion show. And she, you know, struts her stuff and then gives a really cute smile afterward. I thought that was nice.
Yeah, they keep saying it's like 30,000 people or something at this fashion show.
Yeah, that's a lot. I feel like
30,000 is a ton.
That's a lot to watch people walk. I mean, I get they're looking at the clothes, but that is a lot of people.
Like 2 Monday Night Raw arenas in
yeah,
one.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. You had such a reaction to the head massage thing.
Yeah.
And I get what you're saying.
Yeah.
I understand. But, like, I think just personally, it didn't resonate that way. Because, like, the only times I've ever gotten, like, my head massaged is, like, sometimes you can get a coupon for Sports Clips, where after you get your hair cut at Sports Clips, they give you, like, a shampoo thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so the only time I've ever had that happen is, like, some tubby 45-year-old guy after cutting my hair in front of a bunch of fucking fake lockers.
When I get my hair – when I get my head shampooed, it's always, you know, some 30-year-old woman doing it. I'm not, you know, I'm not sexually excited. I'm just saying it feels good. And the idea of, like, a guy that you're interested in doing that is nice.
Okay.
Anyway, so it pretty much just leads to this kind of push and pull thing where Uchi is just saying he wants to express his feelings for Minori, show it through action rather than words. Because she expects him to be a little more passionate. If she's going to say, yes, I want to be your girlfriend, she wants to know that he really means it and that she's not just the best girl of the 3 girls he went on a date with during Uchi Week.
Right.
And then in his mind, he's saying she's not just the best out of 3. She's the best in the whole world. That's his thing. And, you know, I could see – we're just seeing little episodes, little bits and pieces of their lives. But I feel like if you are spending a lot of time with someone, like living with them week in and week out, it's probably very easy for a relationship to develop or feelings to develop, really strong feelings. So I don't think it was unreasonable that Uchi declared that, you know, she was the apple of his eye. I don't know. What do you say? The one he loved the most? I don't know.
Yeah, like he seems very clearly into her, but he's just being pretty bad at letting it be known.
Exactly.
Like they do this thing where they have this dinner date by a bridge and they kind of like walk and talk afterwards. And he's basically telling her like, hey, I like you, but like not in strong terms or anything.
Well, he says, I want you by my side.
Right. And Minori is like not quite ready to like really commit to it. She's still just kind of like, eh.
No, you're missing. She's not that she's not ready. She says explicitly to him, you know, I need you to show me how you feel. Because this is when she admits that she felt weird about him going on the date with the other girls. Now that she thinks about it, when I don't blame her. I mean, like, is he just choosing the best of the girl? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I thought it was reasonable. And she wants him to show a little more passion, if that is the case, that he really loves her. And I think, at least what I thought, I believed him when he said, okay, I'm just going to show you through action rather than words, and I believe that. But it ends up nothing really comes of that, immediately at least. And Minori's sister visits, and Kurumi. What is her name?
Kurumi?
Yeah, Kurumi visits, and she's kind of an audience surrogate, so she's asking all the questions that we want answered, right? She's fantastic. And, you know, she's trying to get information on Minori, what she wants Uchi to do. She tells Uchi what Minori wants, you know what I mean? So that goes well, you know what I mean? And it leads to Uchi and Minori having a little nail painting session.
Yeah, on the couch.
On the couch.
So fucking sleeping on the couch. I thought we established you don't fucking sleep on the couch. Now we got two people sleeping on the couch, including one person.
I don't think it was full-blown seat. It looked like a little bit of a nap.
He goes to sleep on the floor.
Well, that's, you're getting way ahead of it.
I know, but I'm mad about okay, they were breaking the rules.
All right, well, settle down there.
All right.
They're having a very lovely little nail polish thing. Apparently, he's a level 4 nail artist. I don't know what that means, but I know if you're like a hairdresser, if you go to beautician school, like that could be part of the curriculum. You know, you
got enough XP to fill the bar four times.
Exactly. Yes. So he's painting her nails. And, you know, they have a moment there where I feel like it would have been the perfect opportunity for them to, you know, kiss.
Yeah, it's like late at night. They're both about to go to bed. They had a nice day. They're doing this, like, thing together, you know, like, maybe now do a little kiss before you go to bed.
Perfect time. And instead of kissing, Uchi asks Minori to make him some curry, which she does, and it looks amazing.
It's really good.
And he scarfs it down. And then he's so full from his meal that he decides to just lay on the floor and sleep. And obviously Minori is very disappointed because, you know, she was expecting him to live up to his promise of showing how he feels through action, and he's literally sleeping on the floor.
Yeah,
she went out of her way to make a nice meal, you know?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the opposite of showing your love through action. It's just eating a bunch of food, getting full, and falling asleep on the floor is kind of the opposite of that.
Exactly.
And so she throws a pillow at him, and like she's very clearly frustrated with this whole situation.
Sure, and I don't blame her. I mean, that would be such a bummer.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have to remember that these people are young, and they're nervous about doing anything. He was probably really nervous and just wanted to just sleep, you know?
Yeah, it's crazy, because he was so bold and confident, it seemed, with the, like, establishing the Uchi Week thing and telling them all to their faces with them all in the same room. They're like, I'm going to take all of you out.
Mm-hmm.
But they even said, like, the panelists talked about how, like, oh, he is just inexperienced. He didn't do that out of confidence.
That comes a little bit later. So let's just, I think we have to talk about the rice. Minori makes this umu rice, which is an omelet over rice. And she writes a fun message in, I assume, ketchup for everyone that she gives it to. And Uchi isn't home yet. So she writes, like, bon appetit on one plate for someone in the house, other sweet messages on all the other plates. And then she's trying to decide what she should write on Uchi's rice for when he gets home. And so we see her leave the bowl of the rice on the table for him and leave a little note saying, like, welcome back, Uchi. Please sit and enjoy. And he takes off the foil. And on the rice, it says coward.
It's probably, if you're going to write one word to kind of express how you feel in that moment, I think coward was a really good choice.
Yeah, yeah, that was good. I mean, it was a little passive aggressive, but I really appreciate that she did it.
I mean, it's better than just like allowing the stuff to continue without like speaking her mind about how things are going.
Yeah. I mean, she did say, you know, she expects more from him, but also she could give a little more too. I mean, she could be more forward as well, but I understand there's an expectation usually that guys are the ones that are more forward. But
it's a tough situation because they're both somewhat timid, I think, and neither one of them is ready to take the reins and just like make this thing official and like really go for it. So it's just a lot of like, when are they just gonna fucking like make this a real thing?
So Uchi surprisingly eats all of the food there before going upstairs. I would think like he would just rush upstairs.
He's a hungry man.
But he polishes the bowl clean, like completely. And then he goes up to the girls' room, and all the girls are sitting around and chatting. And he asks the girls, the other girls, Arisa and Mizuki, to cover their eyes. And then he goes up to Minori, and Minori is, like, clearly freaking out. And he asks her to shut her eyes or something. And then he, like, says, lift your chin up. And it was super awkward. Like, it was clear that he didn't know what he was doing and that she was super nervous and uncomfortable. And it didn't work out well. She didn't kiss him because why would she? I mean, that was totally out of nowhere. Yeah. And I don't know. Maybe he's seen movies where this happens.
Yeah.
But it became apparent to me, to return to what you said about him being inexperienced, that this cool guy persona that he had been perpetuating was kind of just a facade.
Yeah.
And maybe he was overcompensating for his lack of experience by trying to put himself out there as a cool guy. And I'm not saying he's not cool. He seems really nice and he's talented and he's got, you know, a level head on his shoulders. But he made it seem like he was this, like, suave, experienced, you know, been with a lot of women. That's what I thought.
Yeah, it seemed like that.
But it turns out the reason why he was maybe being so timid was just because he was inexperienced.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, you can tell what he's trying to do here. Like, I think in his head he thinks, okay, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to be a coward. I'm going to do this grand romantic gesture. I'm going to go up there. I'm going to kiss her right on the lips. And, like, it just, like, I know what he was trying to do, but in practice it just did not. It was the wrong time.
Wrong
it was
time.
In front of the other girls. He clearly kind of threw Minori off, and like he was already in that situation. Like, the second he could tell that she was weird about it, I don't think there's any going back, you know? Mm. It's just like, but he keeps trying to kind of force it forward. Like, no, close your eyes. No, lift your chin. Come on.
She was freaking out.
Yeah, it's a really, really awkward scene.
It's awkward.
It's just like, okay, I see what you're trying to do, but man, this is not the way or the time.
Right.
Or, like, but we do get the closure here,
right.
And this was a good way to close out these episodes, is he goes back to his room, the boys' room, and Minori kind of talks to the girls for a little bit, kind of gets her composure after being kind of freaked out about that whole thing, and is like, okay, I'm going to go down there. I know what he's trying to do. You know, I like him. He likes me. She goes down, and they kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
it was really, looked like a really bad kiss.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it looked like, you know, I feel like a first kiss has to be, like, grabbing the face and, like, pulling him in and, like, really going at it for a while. You know what I mean? Not just, like, a 2 second. That was a peck. That was a nice to see
it. It was like they were signing a contract.
That
it
was
wasn't,
like a contract
passionate kiss.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so shall we go through our power rankings?
Yes, we should. Well, let's do the Terrace House power rankings.
Terrace House power rankings!
So let's start from the bottom again. We'll go back and forth here. So this week, I think for this set of episodes coming in last for me, and again, not nearly as strong as what we had to say about, like, Makoto or Yuki the week before that, but I'm going to put Uchi in sixth this time, just because I think he kind of botched some stuff here, especially, like, you know, coming off of that final thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just think he kind of botched it. I'm happy that things are established between him and Minori right now. But overall, it was just a lot of wishy-washiness and everything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think he did anything, again, nearly as bad as or annoying as the last couple last place folks.
Sure.
But I'm going to put him at last place for this stretch.
Yeah, I mean, I get where you're coming from. I think I was disappointed in him, too, simply because he was so different than who I thought he was. I thought he was this cool guy, like I said, and it turned out he was just inexperienced. But I wouldn't really fault him for that. I mean, it's no one's fault if they're inexperienced. And these people are in their early 20s. I mean, most people don't have much experience. Like, you've openly said that you lost your virginity when you were
21.
21.
Yeah.
So he's probably still a virgin. I don't know.
Quite possible.
So six for me was Yuki.
Okay. I almost put him at six.
Yeah, he's down from number one place last week.
Yuki rigged down.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty dramatic drop. And it's not that he did anything bad. It's just that nothing really happened with him in these episodes. So,
no.
I figured I'd rather just push him to the side a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. I considered the same thing.
Okay, number five, Dan?
Number five, I put Minori. Just because, again, I think the frustrating storyline this time was just kind of these two just being wishy-washy might not even be the word. It's just like, come on, one of you fucking step up and make this happen.
Right.
You know, you both want it. It's very clear you both want it. Just make it happen.
Sure.
And, like, I think just kind of the inaction and the indecision on both of them kind of put them near the bottom during this stretch for me.
Right, right, yeah. Actually, it makes me remember one thing that Uchi said. He said he had never been he'd always been pursued. He never had to do the pursuing, which we realize now is probably bullshit.
Probably, I mean. Yeah.
Anyways, five for me was Arisa. Again, she didn't do anything wrong. It's just nothing really happened with her besides getting to know the guys, and she seems really creative. She seems quick. She didn't have any hesitation answering their questions, but nothing really happened. So that's why she's in five for me.
Fair enough. Number four for me is Yuki, for kind of the same reasons you said. I almost put him at last, but like, whereas Minori and Uchi both did things that kind of annoyed me with their indecision, Yuki was just kind of just down the middle, just like, okay, he didn't do anything bad here, he didn't do anything great. Like, he's kind of a non-factor this time.
Right.
But those other two kind of annoyed me at times, whereas he didn't, so I'm putting him at number four.
Yeah, and I like Yuki, but I think, like the panel said, he doesn't have a chance with Arisa, and he probably knows that. Okay, so four for me was Mizuki. She is, you know, again, not really involved in many storylines except for the date with Armand, and I was happy to see her get some attention, and, you know, hope it doesn't work out with Arisa and Armand just so she doesn't get her feelings hurt, but we'll see where that goes. Number three for you?
Number three for me is Arisa. I thought, you know, she seems very nice, very smart, talented and everything. Like you said, you know, there's not any big dramatic stuff that happens with her outside of the potential stuff going on with Armand. I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, she heard the couple of guys were drinking. And she's like, oh, okay, I want to go down and have some beers with these guys and play some ping pong. So it just seemed like a cool girl.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, she is number three for me.
Cool. For three, I put Uchi. Even though he was kind of a coward, he did eventually make a move on Minori when, you know, it was clear it was kind of a do-or-die situation. Again, disappointed that he's not who he seemed to be, but that's to be expected. This guy is 21 years old.
Yep.
Number two?
Number two for me is Mizuki. You know, again, nothing huge in this set that she did, but I am just kind of rooting for her with the stuff with Armand because I was very happy with her, especially like when she first meets him and she was blushing and that nice conversation they had.
It was so sweet.
And that great date. Like, I just felt really good for her that, like, oh man, she's finally, like, something's really working out for Mizuki because I really, really like her a lot. And, you know, she was my number one last time. So, like, I want this to work out for her. So I'm going to put her at number two this week.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like, as we get to know them, you see, like, the good parts of them and the bad parts. But I feel like with Mizuki, we've only seen good stuff. She just seems like such a good person.
Yeah, totally.
Two for me was Armand. He seems just great, down to earth, skilled kickboxer.
Yes.
He's obviously adventurous, and he gives good advice. And it was really sweet what he was saying to Mizuki about her looking like a model and stuff like that. That was just a really sweet exchange. Mm-hmm. And I'm rooting for him. What can I say?
He is my number one this week, just because, I mean, if we're talking power rankings, I think he made the biggest impact in this set of episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think he came in. I think he impressed everyone. I can't think of a single thing he did that really rubbed anyone the wrong way.
He's bad at interviews. That much is obvious.
Oh, at the job interview?
Yeah, that was really bad interview.
Yeah, he didn't get the job. Yeah. But as far as just being a person, you know, he just seemed to, I mean, everyone in the house seems to like him.
He passes the person test.
He seems like a solid person,
What was that called in the last Blade Runner?
Oh, fuck. I know what you're talking about. The one with the fucking test that just screams at you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrifying.
Oh, no. In the first one, it was the Voight Kampf.
Right. The second one is some different thing. Else. It's way more aggressive this time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. I don't think I would pass that.
Oh, God. No. I'd have a panic attack immediately.
You would.
Yes, stop yelling at me, please.
Number one for me was Minori, because it was cool to see more into her job. We really haven't had the opportunity to do that. And obviously, there was a lot of focus on her. The set of episodes because of her relationship with Uchi. And I thought the Omu Rice message was, like I said, a little passive aggressive, but, you know, she had to make her feelings be known in some way, and she did it. And I thought that was really funny, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. I think we got a nice list here for the Terrace House Power Rankings. And we will see next week how things pan out, because we have four episodes left.
Oh, I'm so sad.
Yes, we have four episodes, and then we will go back to our regularly scheduled programming here, trying out some different stuff. I look forward to the next four episodes. I hope they are as eventful as that second episode with all the drama with Makoto and everything. Because, again, it feels like we're doing four episodes. Felt like the first one set things up. Second one had a ton of drama and people left. Now I feel like this episode is kind of setting people up again. And then we'll see if things go south or north or wherever next time.
I get the feeling that we're like cycling out all of the original cast members. So I'm curious to see who goes next. Who's the next to go?
Yeah, I worry about that because like the ones that have stayed behind here, I really like the four originals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the four Daryl Hammonds, as they call them. Yeah, he wasn't original at all. But anyway, good stuff. Not the most dramatic episodes or anything, but still Very fun to watch. Yes. We were very much ready to just keep watching the next one whenever the last one ended. So we will wrap things up next week with episodes 15 through 18 of Terrace House, Boys and Girls in the City, Part 1. As always, I want to thank everyone who's listening to Painting the Stream, and I want to thank everyone who supports it through Anchor's Listener Support feature. Thank you very much. We've gotten some more after this Terrace House stuff has started. Thank you so much for that. So what you can do, if you want to help keep the lights on, if you want to support the podcast, obviously you can give us a five-star review on iTunes and give us a little review there, but you can also go to paintingthestream.com, and you can throw either $1, $5, or $10 a month our way. Every little bit helps, and don't feel bad if you want to do the dollar a month. That helps.
Don't
absolutely
feel bad if you don't want to do anything.
Yes.
Just listen.
Under no circumstances should you feel bad in terms of your relationship with this show. You don't have to ever give us a cent in your entire life, and we will still be very thankful that you're hearing these words right now. So thanks to you, and also thanks to our supporters. If you want to give any feedback or anything, you can tweet at us at PanTheStream. You can email us at PaintingTheStream@gmail.com. I would like to thank Tom Monda for the theme song.
Thanks, Tom.
And, yeah, Bonk, I want to thank you. This show is not possible without you, my wife, my co-host.
Well, I think it'd be possible.
It'd just
probably
be
a little better.
Me by myself talking to the microphone is no good. So it's always nice talking to you about this stuff. So we will be back next week for the finale of Painting the Streams.
The ultimate episode.
The ultimate episode of Painting the Streams' take on Terrace House. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.